This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Steve Sinski, CEO of the American Soybean Association. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with ASA's Steve Sinski next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net. Providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland, crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The nation's soybean farmers have painful recollections of the last Trump trade war with China. American Soybean Association CEO Steve Sinski is hopeful this round will be short-lived and bring new market demand. Sinski says they already feel the sting of retaliation.
Well, I think certainly it has. I mean, the uncertainty, you take a look at 10% across the board tariffs that we have on place here. You know, we've seen a mixed bag. We've seen the soybean market go down considerably in response to some of the tariff announcements, but we've also seen some upticks as well. But, of course, the big thing that we're worried about is, what happens, you know, how long will those tariffs be in place? We at the American Soybean Association have really been urging the administration to, you know, utilize these reciprocal tariffs and now the pause. Thank goodness we have the pause to negotiate trade deals that open up some new market access for soybean producers and for U.S. agriculture and U.S. industry writ large. It does offer that opportunity to, you know, negotiate, to get some more market access, to get some purchase commitments, things like that, that could be very beneficial long term for not only soybeans, but other products from the United States. So we're certainly hoping that's the case. You know, we want to avoid having either the 10% base tariff or the higher reciprocal tariffs in place long term, because of course then the fear is that if we're not able to strike some sort of trade deals, we will see some sort of retaliation. You know, I think the harder one to negotiate with is going to be, of course, China. We seem to be in a bit of a standoff there. You know, we're encouraging both China needs to come to the table, and we hope that the administration is amenable to negotiating what we call a phase two trade deal to try to address U.S. trade concerns and open up new market access and purchase commitments.
Steve, you're darned if you do and darned if you don't. If you don't, you live with countries that continue to take advantage of the U.S., and if you do, then you're in the midst of a trade spat where retaliation is real. There is a pause now, and some countries are coming to the U.S. to try to negotiate a deal. How do you discuss the pros and cons of where we are and the situation?
We've been really trying to be very balanced where we are from the American Soybean Association, of again pointing out that we have the opportunity to use these tariffs as a tool to get new market access. And so we're certainly appealing to President Trump, the deal maker, and that side of him and that those angels that are sitting on his shoulder, on that shoulder, talking to him about using tariffs as a tool to get better deals for U.S. agriculture and U.S. overall. You know, we know that there are those within the administration that also see, you know, tariffs, they want large tariffs, they want to keep them in place long term. We're hoping that it's more Trump the deal maker than President Trump the tariff man that prevails in the end.
So in this situation, there is discussion now of will there be assistance? Last weekend, Secretary Rollins telling on Fox News that absolutely the administration would be there with income assistance.
And over the past week, most recent week, the press secretary suggesting the administration is considering whether there would be assistance or not. Can we afford in Washington to provide income assistance again and still get a farm bill, or is it going to be one or the other?
I don't think it has to be one or the other. I do believe from my own experience of having served in the first Trump administration that President Trump, you know, and he's had some posts even just today on that, knowing that he's going to support farmers, and he recognizes that farmers are on the front lines, that they are the tip of the spear. And frankly, if U.S. agriculture and farmers are the tip of the spear, soybean farmers are on the tiny, sharpest bit of the spear because we're out front. In the last trade war with China, you know, it was soybeans that accounted for about 70% of the losses, according to, you know, USDA's own calculations. So, but I do think assistance can be there. I think President Trump wants to support farmers. You've heard that from Secretary Rollins as well, and now President Trump. And you know, the devil in the detail will be what are the means to do that. We utilized, of course, the Commodity Credit Corporation extensively to do that. There's less money available right now, but there's opportunities for Congress to deal with that by having an early replenishment of the CCC's borrowing authority to allow those kinds of assistance payments to be made.
So from this American Soybean Association perspective, in the midst of this trade war that we have going on, where do you stand on a farm bill, and where do you see the farm bill in the midst of this congressional effort toward budget reconciliation?
Well, we are still pushing for a five-year farm bill to be done this year, sooner rather than later. And we know that that's a tall order. We've already had two extensions of the farm bill. We need a significantly improved farm bill with a strengthened, significantly improved safety net, higher reference prices, strengthened crop insurance. We'd love to see a doubling of foreign market development and market access program funding, other things like that. I do think, you know, what we're looking at and what we're hearing from both Chairman Bozeman and Chairman Thompson is their strong interest in moving at least parts of a farm bill, those things that cost money, like increased reference prices, as part of the Republican budget reconciliation bill that's going to be moving through Congress this summer and probably fall. I think that's part of it. Then, you know, I think their intent, as I understand it, is then to quickly follow up and try to pass the rest of the farm bill, those things that don't cost money or those things that are being authorized or reauthorized. You know, that's all dependent on the first part, the increased reference prices, on there being enough savings. Can the committees come up with enough savings over and above their targets that they have for budget reconciliation in order to pay for increased reference prices? We certainly hope so and are supporting that.
Congressman Frank Lucas on this program last week reminded that the 1996 Farm Bill didn't come through committee, that it was approved in budget reconciliation. But when you talk about budget reconciliation, you're not talking about spending more money. That's a part of a process that's setting limits and having you spend less.
Well, yes. Overall, it is spending less in total. But there's parts. I mean, in order to, of course, pass the Senate's Byrd rule, you know, provisions need to either save or cost money. It can go both ways. And as long as you are coming up with enough savings to offset your net increases, you know, then it could be moving in budget reconciliation. And I think that's the goal of both Chairman Thompson and Chairman Bozeman.
A reality is that nutrition is set in the crosshairs, and that sets up an ugly precedent with regard to farm programs.
Yes, I mean, certainly we know that, you know, the biggest part of this expenditures, as part of that, that the agriculture committees are in charge of, are food assistance programs, and particularly the SNAP program. That is going to be, you know, the area, where people are going to be looking for savings. You know, Chairman Thompson has been very insistent that he does not plan to cut current benefits as part of that in order to come up with the savings, and thinks that there's ways to achieve savings other than cutting benefits. And certainly that's the hope, because we know, you know, if you do cut benefits, then that sets up a very partisan fight, and doesn't bode well for passing the rest of the farm bill, in that second step of the process, if we do end up with a two-step process to try to get a farm bill done.
You know, Steve, I don't remember the administration, that was, or the time that it was happening, but I know there was discussion about downsizing USDA and consolidating county offices, cutting the USDA workforce. So now, whether it is under MAHA or whether it is under this recent document from the Office of Management and Budget and Goals for 2026, it looks like programs and it looks like staff at USDA is about to downsize. And I wonder the impact of that on the programs that producers count on, especially in conservation.
Yeah, that is a concern certainly that we've been hearing about from the American Soybean Association, from producers out there in the field, is just wondering about what are these impacts. I think, you know, everyone agrees that there's efficiencies to be made in government, that there's reductions that can be made, efficiencies to be achieved. That happens every day in the private sector, and that it can be something that should and needs to occur also in the government sector. But I think the key is to be very strategic about it and use a scalpel rather than a sledgehammer. Our hope is that USDA can be strategic. They've you know, I think early on made some moves that they had to then try to reverse course and try to undo. Hopefully that's, you know, they've learned the lessons from that point, but it's clear. You know, I think we are going to see reductions. Our message to the administration has been, you need to make sure that you have the people that are still providing the services to farmers and ranchers. And so that includes, like you said, Jeff, those folks that are working in the NRCS offices, providing technical assistance, approving conservation plans. We got a rich history of voluntary conservation efforts in this country that have been extremely successful. And those programs have been oversubscribed as well, USDA's conservation programs. Farmers want that kind of technical assistance and financial assistance to implement good conservation that's going to make their operations more profitable and more resilient. And just worry about what any kind of mass reductions will do. Certainly, there's probably efficiencies that can be made to make the ability to deliver that assistance with less red tape, and that would be a good thing. But we need to make sure that we don't end up, you know, creating even longer lines for things like conservation assistance, or certainly, you know, the ability to participate in farm programs.
Steve, I'll introduce the topic here of the Kennedy Factor. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the Secretary of Health and Human Services, this Make America Healthy Again movement. We had the Food Guideline Committee meet and make recommendations. And now the MAHA movement and that commission is about to make some recommendations as well. And we understand there could be a threat to oil seeds there. What are your thoughts about this process and the impact that it could have?
We've been very active on the Make America Healthy Again effort. I think, like most people, no one can argue with that. We do have a problem with obesity and disease in this country, and I think that there are things that's worthwhile, very worthwhile, to take a look at those issues. and to see what can be done. What can the government do to try to address those issues? But we have been very concerned and concerned about some of the statements that have been made, frankly, flat out wrong statements about seed oils. You know, the scientific evidence is there on the, just the opposite side of what they've been saying. I mean, there's lots of studies. The American Heart Association has shown that, you know, replacing lard or butter with seed oils actually reduces the chances of heart disease and mortality and cancer risk. There's, you know, the Journal of American Medicine, Internal Medicine, has come out with a study that looked at over 200,000 people over a 30-year period and found a very significant reduction, once again, in heart disease and cancer and mortality risk when people substitute seed oils in place of using lard or butter. So we have science on our side, but what is concerning is that there seems to be some that want to make up science or make decisions based on their beliefs. So we've been pushing back really, really hard on that. We have, you know, worked, and I was ASA, led an effort and had over 300 other organizations write to the Maha, to the leaders of the Maha, including Secretary Kennedy, Secretary Rollins, and EPA Administrator Zeldin, that said, we applaud your efforts, but you have to base your decisions on science, and they have to be grounded on scientific opinion, and you can't cherry pick data, and you can't rely on outlier studies that frankly have problems and have been retracted or disproven as you make your decisions. And we certainly hope that's the case. Just recently, we had 79 Republican House and Senate members that wrote once again to Secretary Kennedy and Secretary Rollins and Administrator Zeldin, basically saying the same thing, that you have to rely on science and that you have to be careful that you don't let the Maha movement be hijacked by activists, that, you know, have been trying to, you know, either eliminate certain categories of food with no science behind them, or want to eliminate pesticide and other things that farmers need in order to keep on producing food for the American people.
Steve, also in the Maha movement, and you mentioned it in your response, there has been discussion of the crop practices that are used to raise crops that are in our food supply. Is this also a concern for soybean growers?
Absolutely. So we've been pushing back just as hard on that issue as well, because, again, there's been some troubling comments made about, you know, eliminating pesticides that farmers use. And I think that ignores, once again, the strong, you know, safety and rigorous standards that already are in place to assess the safety of crop protection products and pesticides to make sure that they are safe. And then they have 10 or sometimes as much as 100-fold safety factors, even above that. And we need to make sure that we aren't taking tools away from American farmers to produce. I mean, you take a look at what has happened in some countries that have, where once again, activists have hijacked the agenda. Just a few years ago in Sri Lanka, activists convinced the government to eliminate, you know, pesticides and synthetic fertilizers. And guess what? Their crop production plummeted, food prices skyrocketed, and the people rose up and you had a change in government.
But I'd like to offer a comment that came from Ken Hartman from Illinois, who's president of the National Corn Growers. Ken just said flat out, for agriculture, we need demand. And the president had said during Commodity Classic that farmers should be prepared to produce for a domestic market. I don't know if there is another market that shows the potential other than renewable fuel. If that industry is going to grow, if oil seeds are going to have a greater supply in the nation's liquid transportation fuel, Steve, what needs to happen?
What needs to happen is we need much more robust renewable volume obligations, or RVOs, under the Renewable Fuel Standard. EPA has the opportunity, this administration has the opportunity to put those in place. Now they're working on proposed RVO levels for 2026 and beyond. We have been working within the soy industry and with the biomass-based diesel industry to propose and say that for 2026, it needs to be set at least 5.25 billion gallons for bio-based diesel. That's just about 2 billion gallons above the current levels for 2025. That shows how anemic and weak the current RVOs are, and that's frankly reflected right now in soybean and soybean oil prices, why you have a lot of biodiesel plants that are frankly shut down. So there is an opportunity to increase domestic demand significantly, and that is through biofuels.
Is it fair to say that if agriculture feedstocks are going to be included as feedstuffs for sustainable aviation fuel, that there will have to be a commitment and even a financial commitment beyond the 45Z proposals to grow this industry? Can it grow without Washington coming behind it with some guarantees for would-be investors?
Well, I think that's a good question. I do think that there are things that can be done. I'm not sure about guarantees for the investors, but we have to have greater tax policy certainty, number one. We need to know, you know, is the 45Z tax credit going to be out there for, you know, a number of years, not just one or two more years? Will it be out there for a number of years so that people can make the investments? Number two, we need to make sure that 45Z that does not discriminate against homegrown domestic feedstocks for biofuels. Right now, it does, and that needs to be fixed. And we're supporting efforts as Congress is working on their tax policy, both to extend 45Z and to make changes to it to, frankly, eliminate the what is called indirect land use change penalties that penalize domestic feedstocks like soybeans and soybean oil, but do not penalize imported feedstocks like used cooking oil or beef tallow that's coming from Brazil, from recently deforested rainforest, used cooking oil that's coming from palm oil plantations that once again could be deforested, that may not be actually used cooking oil at all. There's definitely changes that need to be made, and we're pushing that very hard, that Congress, as they're working on this tax package, we need reforms to 45Z so that we don't penalize our domestic feedstocks and incentivize, frankly, foreign feedstocks.
Well, Steve Zinske, we want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Your service to agriculture, just outstanding over your career, and we appreciate your insight and every time that you can join us here on the program. You've been here before. You know that in AgriPulse, Open Mic, you get the last word.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff, and again, appreciate this opportunity. My last word is let's keep on working to close trade deals that are good for American agriculture and American soybean farmers, and let's keep on working to increase that demand so that we can have greater prosperity for our soybean farmers and all of agriculture.
Our thanks to Steve Zinske, CEO of the American Soybean Association, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.